Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us as always, the man who knows everything, Mr. Smart and Pants.
Howdy.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm okay.
Yeah?
Are you? Don't ask me anything more.
I'm okay. I feel happy.
This is the first time I've confronted the the incident.
You mean the debate?
Yeah, yeah.
You didn't watch it.
Grandpa Simpson versus Pennywise. Yeah, it was quite the show.
I'm going to kill all of you and eat your children. It's like, yay! He says it like it is.
At least he's funny. Yeah, right. Exactly. Oh, man. Yep. I got to tell you, you know, we're not exactly spring chickens.
No.
You and I, Mel.
No.
And there are things that I can't do now that I used to be able to do.
Sure.
And I don't like that. But you know what? I didn't decide I need to become president of the United States. You know what I mean? This is like, you know, I it gets to be the evening, you know, and you just want to kind of wind down.
Right.
And you know, 9 o'clock in the evening, right. You know, Eastern time.
Oh, that's.
It's time to tuck him in. You know what I mean? I'm sorry. I know it's not fair. It's not nice.
Unless blue bloods is on.
But I got to tell you, people, life is not fair, as Jimmy Carter once said. Again, there are things I can't do at my age,
right.
And that I used to be able to do. And there may be things that certain politicians can't do at a certain age. No disrespect, but just a fact.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, it was a strange. I usually don't watch these things, but a friend of mine wanted to watch it and asked me.
One question, I forget. Were you liquored up?
I was not. Maybe that was the
damn,
problem.
Damn, there's your problem.
I quit drinking during those things during the W. Bush years.
Yes, right.
It was just too rough on my liver.
Yeah, understood.
But, you know, after celebrating the 2000 win of Al Gore.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah. Like, I'm still on a bender from that one.
Yeah, but, I normally don't watch them, but I watch it. And, yeah, I mean, it was not a good night for Biden, obviously.
No.
But Trump also, he lied his ass off.
Yeah.
Constantly. Like, from the opening bell, you know, if you want to keep the
problem with that ass reduction approach is it doesn't seem to be working for him.
Where's the baggy suits? But I mean, he didn't answer any questions,
right?
And would you know? I mean, I'm not making this up. They asked him about childcare,
okay,
and he talked about immigration or something. And
that seems like an obvious connection here.
Yeah, it's like that. That would be a solution. Yeah, he says 20 million these immigrants that were all released from prisons,
okay,
are storming across our border.
I see.
And,
all right.
I think there's some fine child care workers in that bunch, but no. So they asked him about child care. He talked about immigration and open borders and all that crap.
Okay.
And then they asked him about climate change,
yeah,
and he talked about immigration. So I learned that immigrants are causing climate change.
Wow.
And
it really is Hitlerian, isn't it?
And
yeah.
Then
all of our problems would be solved.
Yeah, and then there was another inflation, I think, was another one. And
yeah.
And there come. Oh, no, but Social Security.
Oh.
He said, you know,
how
would you work to, you know, establish the stability of Social Security for future generations?
Yes.
And he said the problem is that all these
Wait, let me guess.
You get one guess.
Excuse me, is it immigration?
Yes.
But did the leader make it happen? Yes, Bart, it was the leader.
And you'll never guess that the immigrants are coming here, and they're all getting Social Security and Medicare.
Are they?
Yeah.
Since they're off the books, illegal immigrants
since
are
they
off
don't
the books,
have a Social Security number, and they don't have any work history. So they're all getting that, and real Americans, like veterans, are not getting that because of the immigrants. So.
There are no immigrant veterans, of course.
Yeah. But yeah, that too. That's like a big deal to get.
So what did Johnny Quick say in response to that?
He said, you know, we need the immigrants to lay the railroad line to connect the Transcontinental Railroad.
Who do you think works at the Triangle Shirt Factory, for God's sakes? I'm tired of this malarkey.
he did call him malarkey.
They think that's cute, but it is super not cute. It's like, okay. Yeah. That was cute. Actually, that would have been cute in like 1980.
Yeah.
I mean, he's already like, I mean, that's way past the sell-by date.
4 years out. Yeah.
No, malarkey's not funny anymore.
Yeah. He didn't have the snap that he had 4 years ago when Trump was running his mouth. Yeah. You know, one of the most famous moments of that debate is when Biden kind of rolled his eyes and goes, will you shut up, man? I think that's when he won the election. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I know Satan, and you, sir, are no Satan.
will you shut up, man?
We all were in favor of that. Well, that's the thing.
Tried to do that last night, and because of his problem speaking and whatever, it just didn't resonate. Yeah. So I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that. I mean, that was the thing. Trump is, Trump is the abusive ex-husband. That's what he is.
Excellent.
I'll be good this time. You know, you love me, baby. Yeah. And, you know, it's just kind of like, what? No, get the hell out of here.
I was thinking when I was watching that, you know, they had these two moderators that I don't watch cable news, but apparently they're very experienced in doing political shows and I assume interviews and things like that. And so I'm okay. So they got some, you know, quality people there. But all they did was read the questions and then kind of say, you know, you're out of time, and then they say, okay, over to you, President Biden. And it's like, I mean, they could get an intern to do
that. They get a robot.
You could get Siri to do that.
Press the button.
Get one of those little hand things where you just push a button and it makes fart
AI sounds. Is good for anything. Apparently it will be good for this.
But no, seriously, it's like they weren't, you know, they weren't, and I know that was an actual choice. They let the candidate speak. But, you know, when you ask somebody about childcare and they talk about Hunter Biden, I mean, you might want to say, well, you know, okay, Hunter is his child, so there's sort of a connection there.
But Trump, could we get back to the question?
You might want to follow up and say, okay,
say it nicely.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, when I ask about Social Security, so it was obvious Trump was very repetitive because I think they had drilled into him that, just say these two or three things over and over and over again, no matter what the question is.
Yeah.
And he's really good at exploiting these flaws in the system. And that was a flaw when the moderators decided they were going to be impartial and not ask follow-up questions. Yeah.
Well, that's the old spook and the rep thing. I mean, this goes way back. All the right-wingers just have to, you know, rattle their guns a little bit, and they're all like, "Oh well, we wouldn't want to be unfair."
Right. So I mean, all the headlines are about how feeble Biden was, and I understand that, but also there was the other aspect of it that Trump was just such a liar and so shallow. I mean,
the problem is no one is looking
that's
at
not
that.
News.
A very tiny, slender minority of people in the United States are going to respond to the factual content of what people are saying. And part of that is our failure as a society. I mean, you know, love him or hate him, Thomas Jefferson famously said, you know, if people don't get involved and they don't understand what the issues are, then, you know, it won't make any difference whether you have a constitution or not. We will be the wolves that take advantage of the sheep. Yeah. And, you know, and he knew what that was all about.
Right.
I just kind of like, this is what where we sit. Trump can lie as much as he wants. It doesn't make any difference.
Well, this
because there's no factual, there's no basis of factual knowledge for the vast majority of people that are watching that.
Yeah.
So they're going to respond to, I mean, it was like the thing when people said, would you rather have a beer with George W. Bush or Al Gore, going back to what you were saying about the 2000 election, and people said, I'd rather have a beer with George W. Bush, not having any understanding that he had stopped drinking years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a simple factual question, like, well, who would I rather have a beer with? The guy that doesn't drink anymore. Like, do you know anything about these people? No, nothing. Absolutely zero. Okay, great. Go out there and vote.
And that's also not the what the person you're hiring. If you're hiring somebody for an executive position, your first question is, well, can I have a beer with this guy? Yeah. You know,
could I have the attractive plumber?
Yeah.
No, I want the plumber that knows what they're doing. I really think we need to turn our brains around on stuff like this. I mean, I really do think that when somebody has got a job like a legislator or a governor or something. That's what we should be comparing it to.
Right.
It's not some kind of, you know, they're not a monarch. They're not, but they're a plumber. You know, they're doing a good, if they're doing it right, they're doing a job that requires expertise. And you, as the contractor for that plumber, tell them what your general goals are, and then they have the expertise and the ability to figure out how to realize what that's going to be. And that, and you don't do it yourself because that's a mess. You hire somebody to do it for you, and presumably they have some skill level with that. But a lot of these people that are running, I mean, the only skill level they have is basically in how to get their name out in the news. You know, that's pretty much, I'm looking at you, Marjorie. You know, I mean, that's it. She has no ability to do anything else, as far as I can tell.
Right.
Why would you hire somebody like that? So.
A message from some flounder.
Yes, Ruth called. Thank you, Ruth. To tell you the best quote from last night was Biden to Trump, and you have the morals of an alley cat.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
That is pretty good.
Yeah. But, I mean, it was built up as this heavyweight fight, and the sparks are going to fly, and, you know, all this... You know,
Fur's going to fly in this case.
Will Trump even show up? You know, so I mean, it was just, I know this is, you know, people have been saying this for decades, but you know, it was entertainment and infotainment, and it was a reality show, and so I don't know. But the thing is, there's so few actual undecided voters anymore, because of the Electoral College system, there's about six states. Where your vote matters. Well, luckily, Wisconsin is one of those for us.
Sure that people in New York don't think, lucky Wisconsin. I mean, we're so happy they have the vote.
No.
Poor California.
We get all the advertising money.
That's 30% of our national, our state economy every 4 years.
That and Badger games.
Yeah, right.
But, so my point is that it's all about getting people to show up and to be energized. And you think about, like, the first time Obama ran, people were very enthusiastic.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, oh, we got hope and change, and there was a lot
hopey
of
changey
enthusiasm. Yep. And, you know, and you can, you know, talk about how that went, but that got people excited. Even like when Bill Clinton first ran, there was like, oh, it's a young, energetic guy here.
I was excited.
And it's like, oh, something.
First time there'd been a Democratic president in 12 years.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't care if it's a dead dog in the road, as long as it's got a D next to its name.
So it's all about, you know, getting the enthusiasm. Yeah. And that definitely was, you know, not mission accomplished last night for either of them, really. I mean, you know, I can't. I don't know. I mean, I think the Trump voters look at things a little differently, but
they do.
But you know, I can't imagine watching Trump's performance last night and thinking, well, that was pretty great. You know?
Again, I don't want to diss like 30-40% of the American population, but I suspect the people who are not voting for Trump are a little more sensitive to fact.
Yeah,
I'm just a little bit more, perhaps. Yeah.
Speaking of political ads, I have to compliment Tammy Baldwin's team.
Okay,
they you know it's always a great thing to find, you know, they find grainy footage of your opponent, and then you know run it in black and white, and it looks kind of ominous.
Sure,
and they found some of Hovde.
Yeah,
and he must have been at a costume party because he had devil horns.
That's the official word from the campaign. It was a costume party.
It was just when he took his toupee off for a second. I don't look enough like an evil villain from an 80s movie.
Yeah.
I need to look like Satan, actually.
Yeah, can we see your pointy tail, too?
I'd laugh.
Sir, I have a question for you.
I laughed so hard when I saw that. It's like, oh, bravo. I was just trying to imagine, like, the intern that found that on YouTube, you know, and how excited they were. Yeah. Senator Baldwin! Look at this!
All right, Aloysius, calm down.
So, in other political news,
yes,
Lauren Boebert won her primary.
Yeah, she did.
She won handily, actually.
She really knows how to stroke the voters, doesn't she?
Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Oh, my God.
I was surprised she won. But it's a pretty red district.
Yeah. Well, that's the
guy. I mean, there's a primary. But
there's a lot of inflexibility there. I mean, as you were just saying about the electorate in general. And I think the problem is that there's a solid base of, again, 30 to 40%. I mean, and we've seen this coming for years. You know, Democrats running in southern states, for example, and people come up to say, I can't vote for you. I'm a Christian. This is all about an ideological, a worldwide ideological movement right now, which is nationalistic and primarily religiously motivated and so on. And it's like so many things. Like, you know, everyone's blaming Biden for inflation. Have you seen the inflation in Europe? I mean, everybody says, oh, Biden's numbers are low. Have you, the G7, he and the prime minister of Italy had the best numbers for popularity of anybody in the G7.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not just us. This is like all of the Western world right now.
Yeah, so. Well, that was the other thing that jumped out at me. And I've mentioned this before, but the issues that the moderators brought up, the questions, were largely from the right-wing call sheet.
I mean,
they started out with, I think they started with inflation and then immigration or the other way around.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, that was the first 40 minutes of the debate, those two issues, which are, you know, certainly, you know, GOP issues to hammer home.
Rishi Sunak.
Inflation.
Rishi Sunak would give half of his wife's fortune for 3% inflation rate. I mean,
inflation has not been a big deal lately.
It's not great, it's not easy,
but
it's not great. The thing is, what you need to look at to counterbalance it is, what are the employment figures looking like? Of course, the employment rate is very high, unusually high right now. So,
and I mean, what, you know, the third rail they'll never touch in these things is, well, maybe we need to empower workers more.
Yes.
Maybe we need to have, you know, some sort of, you know, restraints on, you know, unbridled capitalism. And you know, I mean, I'm not talking about doing anything real crazy, but I mean, letting people organize and then having some authority so that, you know, an outside person can come and say, these people could, you know, use a drink of water every once in a while.
One route that the Biden campaign was going down and that Biden mentioned in a couple of his speeches, including his State of the Union, was the whole thing about whether some of this inflation isn't just corporate manipulation of prices right now. And that was getting some traction. But I would bet, Mel, that he did not mention that last night.
I don't think so.
Yeah. No. And that's one of the answers, at least, to where we're seeing that. That was unfortunate. I mean, I think back to poor old Jimmy Carter. You know, I mean, we had two of almost destroyed the world economy, and left parts of Africa, for example, in debt for the next 25 years. Was the oil shocks? I mean, the oil shocks of the 1970s, completely exogenous factors they had no control over. Tried very hard to restructuring our energy economy and how energy is used to respond. But, you know, he's like, oh, look at the terrible inflation of the Carter years. And it's like, yeah, and where did that come from? Like, what do you do with stuff like that? I mean, we had a worldwide crisis in terms of supply during the pandemic. And that may be coming up again because of there being so much fighting going on right now in the world. Yeah. So we may be seeing some more inflation. And, of course, the thing that's extremely funny is if Trump gets what he wants with these tariffs and things like that, I mean, his economic plan is like a recipe for hyperinflation.
Yeah. Well, he again, you can tell when he talks about that he doesn't understand what a tariff is. He thinks it's free money.
He thinks,
oh, I'll put the 10% tariff on, and then China pays us.
Yeah.
Which, you know, sort of. But then China, they obviously just raise their prices. So, I mean, it's a tax, and it's a regressive tax, too.
The whole purpose, for the longest time, I mean, he's looking at 18th century, basically. But, I mean, in the 18th century, when the U.S. government was primarily financed through tariffs, the reason why was actually to encourage domestic manufacturing.
Right.
It was exactly so that people would not buy foreign products. That was the whole idea, right? But they were using the money to support the government. There's no income tax or anything like that in those days. But it was to promote domestic manufacturing. So
And then one more thing, then we can move on here. But it just struck me that all the things they talked about last night, almost all of them were more or less irrelevant. I mean, not in the big sense, but as far as, you know, what a president can do about it, what they were going to do, stuff where you can, you know, 10 years from now, you look back and go, they were worried about that. I mean, it was like, you know, because it,
tech monopolies, artificial intelligence, climate change.
Right.
There's three things I'd want to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so and have a real discussion about abortion, not just let somebody lie their ass off about it.
Yeah. Again, it's not working, Donald. You're thinking to get rid of that ass by lying. It's just not working. Hey, I just want to bring to your attention something that a friend of mine brought to my attention.
Is
on September 15th through 21st, 15th through the 21st of this year, 2024, there's going to be the Cap Times Idea Fest 24.
I'll think and think some more.
Yeah, it's again, tickets are on sale right now, and I'm not sure where you get the tickets, to tell you the truth. There's a bunch of different places. You can get it through the university, I guess, Wisconsin State Journal. Anyway, there's tickets for the Cap Fest Idea Fest, Cap Times Idea Fest, and tickets are on sale now. And among the luminaries who will be there, Nancy Pelosi, the mayor of Chicago, Brandon Johnson, and Doris Kearns Goodwin.
Really?
And of course, they all, you know, books out and things like that. But, I mean, that's no reason not to go. So anyway, so if you'd like to talk with other people about these things, the Cap Times Idea Fest is coming up September the 15th through the 21st of this year, the year of our Lord, 2024.
Hey, for a change, we're going to give something back. We're not going to just ask you for money. We've got a ticket giveaway.
We always give things to people.
We do. We give and give. So. No, it's a July 4th ticket giveaway for the Nightmares. Madison's new collegiate summer softball league. They're playing the 4th of July at the Mallard's Duck Pond on Sherman Avenue. They'll have fireworks at the end, and they'll be facing off against North Dakota Minot, the Honeybees. So anyway, we have, what do we have here? A couple tickets?
We have a couple tickets?
It looks like we've got a couple tickets here.
Yeah.
And we can give them away to, are we ready here? Should we give it to the, what's a good number? You pick a number. The caller. What number caller?
Oh, 7.
Okay, caller number, now, caller number 7. Call and get the Nightmares tickets. So you're the number person. You got all the mindless minion numbers and stuff. So anyway, so yeah, call and get 256-2001 in case you didn't know. But tickets will be at the Will Coleman.
Everybody's making the numbers so. What? Making the number so high means everybody's going to wait for everybody else, which means everybody's going to be waiting for everybody else.
7's not too high.
7's not too high? Okay.
Yeah. So, and while we're doing stuff like that, just want to remind you that there's a few more days to vote for Mel and Floyd in the Best of Madison competition for Madison Magazine. Go to Madison Magazine, their website, and vote for Best of Madison. We're under the Best Radio Team category.
Are we?
So, okay. And we finished third last year. We're hoping for second this year.
Two and a half, I suppose.
As a Minnesotan, I'd be very happy with second place. So, and one more thing. We're going to be at the,
the Fête de Marquette.
The Fête. Yeah, when are we going to be back in the Fête?
Fête to be tied.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Got to look it up here. When are we going to be at the Fête?
I think it's the 13th of July.
It's the 13th? Yeah.
We'll be there with bells on.
What time are we going to be there? I can't find it here. Oh, there we go.
Not after 9 o'clock. I need my nap time.
Saturday the 13th. We'll be at the WRT booth from 3 to 5. So stop
3 to 5.
By and right. Say hi.
Yeah, talk to us before we do our sundowning.
We'll tell you about corn pop.
Corn pop. Oh, my God. New poll just came out, and really, really appropriate when if you've looked at the news today. Solid majority of Americans, 70%, according to an Associated Press, NORC Center for Public Affairs Research poll, according to this poll, 7 out of 10 Americans, 70%, think that the justices of the Supreme Court are more influenced by ideology than by concerns of justice
really?
Or partiality. 70%. Only about 30% of U.S. adults, according to this poll, that again done by a reputable group, thinks that the justices decide things based on some abstract, principles of justice. The poll reflects, of course, the continued erosion of confidence, which would only be enhanced if you looked again at today's decisions of the court. Basically, getting rid of the administrative state basically saying to the people that attacked the Capitol, yeah, okay.
Do you see the ruling they had earlier about some public official had gotten $13,000 after making a decision and like handing out a bid or something. I don't have it right in front of me. But they said, well, you know, when it's done afterwards, it's fine.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know. Like the concept of a promise is something they've never heard of.
Like, for example, if someone would give you $250,000 luxury RV, you know, after a decision, that's perfectly fine. Yeah. So they essentially legalized bribery this week.
Wow.
As long as it's not in a big bag that with the dollar sign on it, delivered by a guy in a striped shirt with a little domino mustache.
Those were the good old days. There was the good. I remember reading that.
Well, Nixon had actual bags of
Nixon
cash.
Nixon had bags of cash, and Johnson, when he was the majority leader of the Senate, I read this in Robert Caro's, one of the volumes of his biography of Johnson, Lyndon Johnson, and he actually literally brought paper sacks full of money onto the floor of the Senate.
Well, John Boehner handed out checks from the tobacco companies on the floor of the house.
And a pack of Luckies.
Some Camel.
Smooth.
It was all Camel cash.
Exactly.
Well, there's a story when Lyndon Johnson was first coming up, you know, for running for his first, I assume, the U.S. House.
Yeah, he was running for the House.
He would buy votes retail. He would just, like, have a public appearance, and he would sit there with a wad of like $5 bills and just hand them to people.
To continue that tradition and that story, when I graduated from high school in Eastern Kentucky, I remember our superintendent of public instruction. That was the center point of all the corruption in the county that I grew up, because it was a super poor county, and the only way that money was coming in was through the school system. Yeah, so people would basically, it was a political bonanza for the school board and for the...
Oh, you need a new roof there.
Yeah, well, you hired the bus drivers, you hired the lunch ladies. I mean, it wasn't just the teachers. People that were doing contract work, everything came from federal money.
Yeah, but you could hire all them at your family reunion.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I remember the guy that was the superintendent, Sheldon Clark was his name.
Oh, that's a good name.
And isn't that a wonderful name? And when I graduated, he was standing outside of the school with a giant wad of money in his hand. I'm not making this up. And he would peel off a few bills. And of course, I was notorious, as you might imagine, in high school. So he said, "Well, I'm really glad to see you graduating. I was worried you're a little out to left field on a lot of things," he said to me. And I was like, "Sheldon, you think child labor laws are out to left field?" And of course, being the autocrat that he was, he chuckled at that, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, he thought, funny
good,
guy.
Good point.
Good point. Yeah, exactly. And I never forget that. Just roll it, just peeling off those bills.
Yeah, that's
and
what
just,
LBJ did.
Yeah, enough to choke a horse.
Speaking of education... Oklahoma State Superintendent requires public schools to teach the Bible.
Yeah. Which one?
He said the Bible was a necessary historical document.
No.
Well, it's important.
I think you should study it as literature.
Study it, but not as like science or anything. Comes part of a conservative movement to infuse Christian values in public schools. So.
And which are those?
Yeah.
Because as I remember from a great speech from a great man, both the North and the South read the same Bible. Lincoln's second inaugural. So and they got some really interestingly different messages from that document.
Yeah.
Like slavery's okay was one of them. Yeah. Women should shut up in church. That was another one I remember. Jean called in and won the nightmare tickets. And she is happy she'll see the miniature horse. I don't know anything about the miniature horse.
I didn't know they had a miniature horse.
Wow.
Oh, I definitely.
Tell us more.
You know,
we're there.
Ruby was here last week.
She did not mention the miniature horse.
She did
horse.
Not mention it. Maybe they didn't have it at the opening, but maybe it's a new thing. So
congratulations to Gene, and please enjoy your tickets.
Thanks for calling in, everybody. Yep. But so, you know, that reminds me, last week we had the story about the Ten Commandments in Louisiana.
Yeah,
Louisiana, and then you know you were saying that there's different versions of it.
Yeah, there's 17 separate injunctions.
Yeah. So what I'm thinking is they should get like representatives from all the different branches of Christianity and Judaism, and you know have those people meet.
Yeah,
and then agree on which one they want to put up in the classroom.
And the minute they all agree, we'll put it up. The millisecond that they agree.
Exactly. All they have to do is get together and figure out which one that they want.
You should be governor of Louisiana.
And we'll cut the baby in half.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that was another thing Trump was on last night. I promise to stop talking about this, but he was talking about the Democrats are pushing for abortions, after birth abortions.
I heard this, yeah.
Yeah.
So that leaked out. I was like, what are you talking about?
And he said it several times.
Well, I saw Ralph Reed. He was saying that earlier, too, that they were, you know, they're in favor of infanticide. We used to call that infanticide. You know, remember Ralph Reed? He was this pixie-like little guy that was in head of the moral majority
he's still around.
He's still around, and he looks like he has been. It looks like some like ironic curse because he still looks like an elfin. But you look him in the face, and it's kind of like imagine a child that looked like an old man. It was like really creepy as hell.
It's like those vampires when they're turned when they're kids.
It's like, okay, well, you're living in your own special purgatory. Oh, wait, no, he doesn't believe in purgatory. That's right.
Hey, we have to take a break and play some announcements, and then we're going to come back in a little bit. Just a reminder, you are listening to WRT 89.9 FM in Madison, the Emerald City. You might be listening on the internet because we stream all our shows, and you might be listening on in the future, hopefully with the WRT app, listening on the archives. Or thanks to our pal Mindless Minion D-Cubed, you could be listening via Spotify or Apple to the podcast. Yeah. So.
And get our new device from Meta where we can beam it right into your brain.
Yeah, we'll just
insert the tube right here.
We'll be doing that at the FET. I've got a Black & Decker I'm going to bring, and then we can just...
Who wants the surgery?
Just load you right up there. Got a little ball peen hammer. Ding, ding, ding. We're gentle. It'll work out fine. So, all right, we have to play some announcements and then come back with...
I got a lot of tech information here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a lot of tech stuff.
That'll work.
WORT. Thanks its listener sponsors and Bluestem Jazz presenting the Christopher Dahmen Sextet on Friday, July 5th at the North Street Cabaret, 8 p.m. Chicago bassist and composer Christopher Dahmen brings together drummer Scott Clark from Richmond, Virginia, and local Chicago stalwarts Edward Wilkerson and John Robigon on saxophone, James Davis on trumpet, and Mabel Kwan on piano, performing originals inspired by Sonny Murray. More information and tickets are available at bluestemjazz.org.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in-Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
2024 is halfway over. Did you make New Year's resolutions? How are they going? Statistics say that by February, most of them have tanked. But there's emotional aspects to your goals that most people ignore if you try to change your behavior without doing anything on the inside. Why can't we look at every day as a New Year's? Each hour, each minute. That's called mindfulness. That is the thing. Noticing, checking in with yourself, and how you're really feeling in the moment. On January 1st, I did my first show, Ask Amy, a live call-in advice show. This Monday, July 1st at 7, is our next installment. We can continue the discussion of goals or mindfulness, and I will have a guest co-host with me, another licensed local psychotherapist. Please remember, this show is for lighter topics. If you're feeling something more dire, you might consider calling 988. Tune in this Monday, July 1st at 7 p.m., to WORT 89.9 FM Madison to the Access Hour.
Hi, I'm Mel from The Mel and Floyd Show.
And I'm Mr. Smarty Pants.
This year, we face the most important election of our lifetime.
We're talking, of course, about Madison Magazine's Best of Madison Top Radio Teen category.
Once again, our little show is a finalist in that category.
Last year, you'll remember, we finished third in what can only be described as a rigged election and a very bad vote counting thing.
So we need you, the mighty WRT listeners, to find us a few votes.
Full disclosure, we admit there is not even a single felony on the record of any of our hosts, which is certainly a drawback.
Despite that, we're still asking for your support.
Voting runs through the end of June, so click to the Madison Magazine site and vote now for Mel and Floyd for Best Radio Team.
The fate of democracy depends on you. And we're back.
Hail to the chief, as in triumph he advances.
Well, I didn't know they had words.
Oh, there's words to it, yeah.
I
think they started using
it
originally, I think, in the 1840s.
Yeah.
They had the march that they had for the president that was written for President Washington later was used as the vice president. The poor vice president always gets the leftovers. It's the vice presidential march, which is it Hail Columbia? Yeah, it's the... That's the vice presidential march.
So. Hail Fredonia. Yeah.
Hail Fredonia. Hail Fredonia. Hey, got a lot of information about our tech industry that just came out this week. And
that doesn't affect anybody.
That doesn't affect a single person. And apparently, here's some interesting, there's a suit right now against Meta. I don't know if you know about that. It's a lawsuit that basically said that Meta has been abusing children. In an email that was presented in the trial that's going on, a man by the name of David Ginsburg, who was a Meta executive, he emailed his boss, Mark Zuckerberg, and he said that the company had there's some problems, especially around the area of problematic use, addiction, and teens. And he, in this email, he asked Mr. Zuckerberg for 24 engineers, researchers, and other staff. Saying that this was going to be a problem, and we really need to do something about it. So there's these email exchanges that exist. This lawsuit has been filed by attorneys general of 45 states in the District of Columbia, and they're saying that Meta unfairly snared teenagers and children. And of course, the response is, balderdash, humbug. But it turns out, internally they were talking about this at a very high level. It seems not unlike a certain cigarette companies back in the day. And they said, well, it's more important that we make a lot of money.
I've got a Meta story here real quick, too.
Do you have a story about Meta or a Meta story?
Kind of both.
Okay. Fair enough.
They did a study of the traffic on far-right websites like Breitbart and Newsmax and all those, and even the crazier ones. They've seen as much as a 95% decline in unique visitors in 4 years.
Really?
And you know why that is?
I can't imagine.
Because Facebook changed their algorithm.
Oh.
I assume they were under pressure, but they changed their algorithm to recommend stories and things that were more tied to like what your friends and things that you've looked at before, rather than just automatically pushing right wing stuff at you.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
95%.
Wow. Oh, so let's see. Another one was, how AI, so Apple, Microsoft, and Google, they're getting in big time to artificial intelligence, smartphones, computers, and so on. Here's something you need to know about that is they're basically stripping your data. Like everything that has to do with the development of artificial intelligence is mechanically vampiric. I mean, that's all it really is. They're basically taking all this information and they're even changing contracts. So late July, Google started by making some changes to its privacy policy, which, of course, no one ever looks at, buried in thousands of words. And the original text was, we use publicly available information to help train Google's language models and build features like Google Translate. And so then they just changed language to AI models and added products and features and then named the other, of course, cloud AI and all the other stuff that they have. So basically, without really even knowing it, because people never pay attention to these things, they've changed the contracts that they have in the fine print to allow themselves to basically strip information from their users. And this is something that, as you might imagine, in Europe, they're very annoyed at. But here in the United States, la, 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 what harm could come from that? Fortunately, a bunch of musicians and artists and so on are pushing back on this because, of course, they don't want the stuff that they're developing to be on various devices to then be basically exploited and used again in this vampiric way. In February, the Federal Trade Commission had warned tech companies that changing their privacy policies to retroactively scrape old data could be unfair or deceptive. And the response, of course, from the companies was, duh.
Shareholder value.
Shareholder value.
It's like when you hold up a crucifix to a vampire. You know? It's like, wards everything off. Shareholder value.
Both Apple and Microsoft right now are in big trouble with European regulators. The EU charges that Apple broke their what's called Markets Act, Digital Markets Act, which was passed in 2022. It gives European regulators authority to enforce the largest online gatekeepers to change their business practices. So apparently Apple has fallen afoul of the regulators in Europe, and so has Microsoft. Microsoft is not the markets law on theirs. This is just straightforward antitrust issues. And they're saying that Microsoft broke antitrust rules in the European Union by bundling Teams video conferencing and collaboration software with a suite of other things, saying if you have to buy that, you have to buy the other things as well, which of course gives them greater control over that particular part of the market. One final story about AI. Apparently, the executives at NBC Universal have decided that one of the announcers that they're going to have at the Olympics is going to be an imitation AI.
Al Michaels.
It's right? Al Michaels. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. And he will not be in the broadcast booth. They've decided that he's 79, and they've decided that they're going to be using clips. And
so they decided he was too old to go and sit and talk.
Right.
In a studio.
I'm thinking about.
He's 79.
I'm thinking there's. There's something into this that you might. There's a conclusion you could draw. I just leave it to the listener.
So, going from artificial intelligence to Florida,
kind of the opposite, right.
A man was arrested Wednesday in Lake County, Florida, accused of rendering thousands of dollars in damage to a drone. He shot as it attempted to make a delivery for Walmart. Dennis Wynn, he's 72, faces charges of shooting or throwing a deadly missile into dwellings, vessels, or vehicles.
Wow.
And for discharging a firearm in public. But, I mean, you know, the drone was up there, and it was moving.
Yeah.
It was a perfect...
Fair game.
Fair game.
And it's Florida.
Dennis had a gun. It's Florida. Like... How can you not shoot that?
He had a reasonable belief that it was deadly.
He was standing his ground.
Yeah, exactly. On the earth.
Oh, God. So on the earth.
That's my ground, man. Hey, here's a story. This was kind of interesting. A spacewalk by two NASA astronauts at the International Space Station almost ended... it ended on Monday, almost as soon as it began, because water started squirting out of one of their spacesuits.
Oh, no.
According to Tracy Dyson, there's water everywhere. And
not the drink.
And it was really, really cold. I guess the this is part of the cooling unit in the spacesuit. You might think, well, why do you need cooling units in space? But when the sun shines on you in space, It really shines on you. So you can get pretty hot pretty fast.
Sure.
But I got to tell you, the thing that was the most shocking about the story was we have astronauts that are walking in space. I'm like, really? I have no idea.
It's so routine now.
Yeah, it's like, whatever.
It used to be front page news.
Yeah, this was on page 32.
Staffers at a Nevada school district spent over $30,000 on a trip to Hawaii as part of a recruiting drive. Eight members of the staff of Clark County School District used $22,000 in COVID relief money to help fund the trip, which saw them stay on Waikiki Beach. They used $10,000 from a general fund, and then only 100 job seekers attended the recruitment fair, with staff only taking 2 resumes. Okay. Or you can put an ad on, you know, like Indeed or something and get 1,000 resumes. But that's not as much fun, I guess.
So, not at all.
Yeah. So.
Hey, another piece of interesting news from the LGBTQ plus community. Last week we talked about the Thai legislature basically passing a law legalizing gay marriage. This week, President Biden pardoned American veterans who were convicted of engaging in gay sex.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, the proclamation grants clemency to about 2,000 people who were charged between 1951 and 2013. And the president said that he was righting an historic wrong. Today, I'm righting an historic wrong by using my clemency authority to pardon many former service members who were convicted simply for being themselves. So the proclamation addresses charges brought under Article 125 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, a federal law that made a crime to engage in unnatural carnal copulation with another person of the same or opposite sex, even with mutual consent. So unnatural carnal copulation.
Hmm.
Sounds pretty fun.
Like a great band.
Yeah. Speaking of which, did you see Kinky Friedman died this week?
Yeah.
Oh, Kinky.
Yeah.
Kinky Friedman, cool. The Texas Jew Boys. I remember that. There's a very famous song of his, which I cannot say on the air.
Oh, right.
About
right.
Somebody from El Paso.
Yeah. Could have been governor.
Yeah, could have been. Could have been. Yeah, it was him and who was the guy that he was?
Rick Perry, I think.
Yeah. I remember him about as well as he remembered which departments he wanted to get rid of.
A little more election news. This is from Canada. A Canadian man has made history by receiving zero votes in a contested federal election.
Excellent.
After running as part of a protest over the lack of electoral reforms in the country. The guy's name is Felix Hamel, told the CBC, when I saw the result, I was like, well, I am the true unity candidate. Everybody hates me.
That's very Canadian of him.
He was among 84 people listed as a candidate in a recent election held in Toronto.
Yeah.
He put his name forward as a candidate after he was approached by the Longest Ballot Committee, which works on electoral reform advocacy. Mm. That's a great name. So. Mm. So there you go. Zero votes.
Excellent.
So
a perfect record. There's a story I saw. This is from a study that was done in the journal Biotropica, and it's about. I got a new catchphrase, by the way, as a result of this story. It's about leeches, a certain kind of land leech that exists in the island of Madagascar.
Okay.
And for years, people have been saying, all the way back to the 1880s, when Ernst Haeckel came there back in the day, the famous German. Biologist.
His partner, Hans Jekyll.
That's so dumb. I love it. When I teach history of science, I'm never going to be able to say this guy's name again without laughing. So thank you, Mel. All right. Well, thanks for feeding me material. Anyway, the native people there, the folks that live actually in the jungle, say that these leeches are not just regular leeches. They don't just wait around. These are leeches with a little bit of pizzazz.
Oh.
They leap on you.
Oh,
and
they're go-getters.
They're go-getters. They definitely are. And what they go get, of course, is your blood. But until very recently, this was merely anecdotal. It could not be counted as a scientific fact until... there was research scientist. She's a postdoctoral researcher at Fordham. Went there and she actually filmed a leech leaping, flies in the air,
and leeches leaping.
Leaping leeches. That's my new catchphrase. But apparently, this is what I love about this story. Finally, a brown pillar of flesh and muscle standing atop a green leaf
waves back and forth on its quest for blood. Then it coils itself into a comma, bunching up its lower half. Isn't this great reading? Finally, the leech leaps, flying through the air with a kind of wild abandon. Wow. You can almost imagine hearing a tiny, Yahoo!
Blood. Blood. That's great.
So we now have actual filmed, evidence, recorded evidence of leeches leaping through the air. So,
wow.
So, unfortunately, another place to cross off the list. Sorry, I'm not into Madagascar leaping leeches. Wow. It's just not for me. But.
As you know, the Republican National Convention is coming to Milwaukee.
Speaking of leaping leeches.
Speaking of leeches.
Nice transition there, Mel.
Well, this is sort of about that because the tourism type businesses
were
all, promised that this is going to be just a gold mine for you.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not panning out.
Oh,
the restaurant
panning the gold is not working.
The
huh?
restaurants are underwhelmed by the reservations. The hotels are underwhelmed. It says RNC bookings are underwhelming and a failure. Event ventures and restaurants raise concerns. They're showing the picture here. The First Serve Forum. I think that's
why do they think that is? What's going on?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe people are afraid to come to Milwaukee.
Well, after. Yeah.
It's a horrible place, I hear.
They're all going to be in Waukesha.
It says the Riverside Theater and Pabst Theater will sit empty during the convention, and some other downtown restaurant owners are worrying about lack of activity. So.
Wow. Wow, that's weird.
I know.
Meanwhile, in Chicago, they're going to do a sort of redo of 1968, I feel.
Get work as an extra, being beat up.
Yeah,
down there.
Yeah. A beater or a BT? What would you rather
be? Put this long haired wig on.
Yeah, that's fine. Hey, a Voyager 1 is back online.
Oh, cool.
I don't know if you heard about this, but no. they thought the probe might be lost because there was a computer problem. Of course, when Voyager was launched, they used kerosene in their computers, so I'm a little worried about that. But no, it's been several months. They had a big computing problem. And Voyager 1 has been up there flying around, zipping out beyond the heliopause of our solar system for nearly 50 years now. And they figured out what to do about it. Engineers, those pesky engineers, they've been working to diagnose and resolve the problem. And it's taken a while, but they finally did. And Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 were both launched in 1977. As missions to explore the outer planets. But they thought, while it's flying out there, why don't we just see if we can keep it going as long as we possibly can.
Playing the hits.
Yeah, playing the hits. Unfortunately, Voyager 1's lease on life may not be very long.
Yeah.
NASA has predicted, previously estimated that they have nuclear powered generators, that they're probably going to, on both of the spacecraft, they're probably going to expire by next year.
Mm.
Because just the energy is running out.
Sure. These aren't leaping leeches, but Minnesota board candidate who allegedly threw live tarantula at her tenant is charged with assault.
Wow.
No comment on that.
No, It just seems so bizarre. But it's just like, here, take this.
The rent's late. Here's your tarantula.
The original cover art for the first edition of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, as it was called in Great Britain, sold for $1.92 million at an auction on Wednesday, which just shows that there are some people that have too much money. It's a watercolor painting, which this is, of course, before the movies or anything like that. But it shows the young Harry going to Hogwarts, from the famous platform 9 3/4 at King's Cross Station. And it was part of a private library of an American book collector. And he sold that at Sotheby's in New York this week.
The year before the novel came out in 1997, its publisher, Bloomsbury, had hired a 23-year-old from England who had just graduated from art school to design the book jacket. And the artist's name was Thomas Taylor. And it turns out he would have a big impact because he would go on to basically establish the world's connection, or conception rather, of Potter with his little lightning scar.
Sure.
And his, of course, his round glasses. And
very cool. So a suburban home in Connecticut caught fire, and the firefighters responded.
Yeah.
And then they got there.
Yeah.
And they realized the house was full of fireworks. This is like right out of The Simpsons.
Oh my God.
And so the fireworks started exploding coming out of the burning house. And so the firefighters said, screw it. And they helped burn the building to the ground. They intentionally
burned. Burn, baby, burn.
Fahrenheit 451. Here we are.
Got any books?
No, they decided the best thing to do was intentionally burn it down and have a controlled burn. To get rid of all the fireworks.
That's amazing.
The explosives, as they call them.
Yeah.
Leaping leeches.
Leaping leeches, exactly.
But Jaguar, are you coming out of here today?
Yeah.
Oh, he's back. He came out of the other studio for a few weeks.
And he's got pizza for us.
Because they had the fancy new board over there, but now we've got the new board here. So.
Strange obstruction.
It's fancy in here, too, now. It's like the bridge of the Enterprise. Here's an interesting story.
Yes.
This is from, this is from Puerto Rico. Actually, it's from a small island just off the coast of Puerto Rico.
Okay.
Called Cayo Santiago. And they did a study recently that was very interesting. There was, you know, there was a hurricane, Hurricane Maria. It was about 5 years ago. Remember that? Maybe that was the one where President Trump was hitting people with rolls of
paper towels.
Yeah. But so this little island, this Cayo Santiago, it's like a little lush little jungle oasis, right? And it is lots of little macaques, these monkeys that live there. They experienced some really bad real estate change overnight because of course all the trees got mowed down and they couldn't hide out from the tropical heat and things like that and macaques are known to be some of the most quarrelsome, I would say second most quarrelsome primates on the earth. If I had to judge. And we're looking at you, human race.
I thought you meant two old guys arguing about golf games.
But they have strict social hierarchies, again, totally just a macaque thing, and then are maintained through aggression and competition. We're talking about macaques. I just want to let you know in case you're confused. But so they figured that what was going to happen is after the island was devastated, the macaques would just a big battle royale would break out.
Sure.
But something weird happened. Something weird happened they did not expect. The macaques are getting along.
Really?
It turns out that...
did Jimmy Carter go down there or what?
Instead of becoming more competitive, individuals widened their social network and literally became less aggressive. This is according to Camille Testard. She's a behavioral ecologist and neuroscientist at Harvard University.
Wow.
And they just published this study this week in the journal Science. And... they basically, the macaques sized up the situation and said, you know what? We're going to have to change our social structure, basically.
We need infrastructure week.
We need to have infrastructure week. So she suspected that the change in their behavior, which was very opposite of what they normally do, is because fighting was too energy intensive.
Oh, that's really cool.
And part of the reason why maybe they didn't want to do it anymore was because there was sweltering heat. So instead, a lot of these monkeys sort of jumped on the peace train, man, and decided that aggression was going to have a steep price. And so they reasoned it out in their little monkey minds, and there was a 42% decrease in the odds of mortality as a result.
That's a really cool story. I love that. So, hey, you're listening to WRT 89.9 FM Madison. It is 2 o'clock. Stick around. The kiosk is next. After that, Who Cooks Free with the Real Jaguar, Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, Labor Radio, all kinds of great stuff. Pants, time to declare. The weekend. Enjoy your weekend, and thanks for listening, everybody. And remember, vote Mel and Floyd for the Madison
Mel
magazine.
And Floyd.
Best of Madison.
Sacks of cash are coming your way.
One, two, three. This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, June 28th.
The Madison Rafa Sister City Project is partnering with more than 25 artists to present a silent art auction in response to the humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza. Bidding is open online now and will run until July 8th on over 50 works of art, with proceeds going to Middle East Children's Alliance for immediate purchase and distribution of desperately needed humanitarian aid in Gaza. Many of the artists represented are Wisconsin-based, and their donated work includes a wide array of art, including photography, acrylic, and mixed-media paintings, pottery textiles, prints, and embroidery. Anyone can see the art now at https://www.32actions.com/art-for-Gaza-2024. Online bidding is open now. An exhibit of the art is open to the public at Java Cat Coffee Shop, 4221 Lean Road on Madison's East Side. And Java Cat will host a meet-and-greet event on Tuesday, July 2nd from 5:30 to 7 p.m. with a chance to meet some of the artists who have donated their work and learn more about Middle East Children's Alliance work in Gaza. Because entry of humanitarian aid is severely and unnecessarily restricted by Israel, the people of Gaza are facing an unprecedented level of death, injury, displacement, disease, trauma, and destruction of their ability to survive in their own land. In spite of these difficulties, the Mideast Children's Alliance's Gaza staff has worked from the beginning of the crisis with local and international partners to source food and other necessities. This is a great chance to help. You can get a sneak peek at the art now online at www.32auctions/art-for-Gaza, or enjoy a cup of coffee and view these lovely pieces at Java Cat on July.